What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
That's me, here in every episode. The other host of the show.
Not the other host of the show.
Just hosting away, doing what hosts do.
What do hosts do?
I suppose they come up with like the things we're going to talk about on the show. They talk during the intro, you know. Prepare corny jokes and such.
Does that mean I get to be the subject of the show?
Does that mean you get to be the subject of the show?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I feel like we're both sort of the subject of the show.
Oh, well, see, that makes it sound like you're the guest.
What?
Yeah, well, if you're the subject of the show, then it seems like that. If that's the argument, like, that makes you the guest. The guest is the subject of the show. That's the whole point of them coming on to the show. The host is like the constant that the audience gets used to.
The host is the subject. The guest is the content.
I think that the guest is the subject.
I don't know.
You disagree. So, okay. Yeah. So we make videos every single week, and they all have titles. So, like, you know, we talked about, like, WandaVision in this week's episode. The subject of that video is WandaVision, right?
Sure.
Wanda would be our guest of that show.
No, there's no guest on the show.
I know, but I mean, if it was a guest,
But it's not. This is different. There's two people here. There's only one person on the main show.
No. I mean, I understand that, but, like, we're talking about something, and if we were, like, talking to somebody, if we were having Wanda come on the show,
yeah,
she would be the subject of the show.
What we were talking about would be the subject of the show.
I disagree. I think we at best we're gonna have to agree to disagree.
If, like, Jimmy Fallon has Elizabeth Olsen on
Wanda, I think is what you mean, but yeah. I follow.
Then do you think she's the subject of the show, or is Jimmy the subject of the show?
I think Jimmy's the host of the show,
right?
And I think she is the subject.
And it's called
of the
Jimmy Fallon show, or it's not. It's called the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
With Jimmy Fallon, sure.
Yeah.
Right, but I still think, okay. What I'm trying to say is that, like, the thing that makes the show interesting, the thing that they talk about on that episode of the show, is that person.
Normally they're, like, promoting their movie, less about, you know, them as much.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like the subject of the Tonight Show is, like, what's new in pop culture.
Anyway, as the host of today's show, how about we go ahead and just tangent over.
You know so much about all this hosting business.
We'll tangent right on over to this week's corny joke, which comes from Dan Ragor, who says, why did the Scarecrow keep getting promoted?
Why did
the
Scarecrow keep getting promoted? This is, like, a good one because it sounds like a cornfield joke.
It is. That's part of what I loved about it.
Ah, great. Yes. I don't know. Why did the Scarecrow keep getting promoted?
Because he was excellent in his field.
Oh, excellent.
I'm so proud of that Scarecrow for doing such great work.
I don't want to, like, correct your corny joke, but I can read the answer right here.
Oh.
And it says because he was outstanding in his field. Like, get it? Like,
you know what?
Outstanding.
You know what?
Standing out in the field.
That's a spot on correction because as we're recording, I'm, like, not wanting to, you know, like, look at my notes or whatever. I'm trying to go off the cuff. And then, yeah, I that's a good point.
There you go.
That's a good point. Wow. You know, I'm gonna leave today's episode. You can just take over from now. I feel like apparently I don't know what a host does, what the subject of a show does, how to actually properly tell a corny joke. So what am I even doing here?
I don't know, Ben. What are you doing here?
You know, I wish that you would ask me for advice sometimes.
That I would ask you for advice? Do you think I don't ever ask you for advice?
No, never. Absolutely never. Absolutely never.
Do you go home and, like, journal about it?
Of course not.
Okay.
No, it doesn't matter that much to me.
Okay.
But
it, like, stands out in your mind that I don't ask you advice?
Yes. So I feel like this has been one of these things about this show that I've noticed is that because you never need advice on anything ever, it means that I have found myself in a position as we do this show where I'm constantly asking, like, you advice.
Okay.
And I think that the social psychology of that is almost this thing where I'm, like, I'm becoming overly dependent on your way in on things in my life.
Okay.
So I've got, like, big brother issues, you know? Like, it's like I've gotten so accustomed to, like, asking your advice for everything that it's like now it matters. It's like seeking that big brother approval. Like, this is what you did just today, that was cool and I approve. And it's like, oh, excellent. A gold star. I'm going to go put it in my journal.
It feels like you're asking me to give you advice about how to not rely on my advice so much.
Maybe.
Which is like a self-defeating paradox.
Well, you know, it's sort of...
Because if you listen to me, then you're also not listening to me by listening to me.
Well, I'm not saying that I don't like your advice. I just think that because you never need advice and because we're so constantly in interaction with each other and I have an ongoing compulsion to talk.
Yeah.
It means that like I fill the void with asking you for advice.
Do you need advice on something right now?
No, not right now. I'm fine.
I don't even think of this like podcast as like an advice podcast.
No. And it's not just the podcast itself. I would say this extends to every aspect of our life, because outside of this podcast, we also work together in the same office for 40 hours a week. And outside of that, we're still family. And outside of that, we're still friends.
Yeah, sure. So
we spend an awful lot of time together.
We got a lot of layers.
We got layers. Yeah, indeed. So here's my question for you though, is why do you never need advice? You have like, and I would say this like dates back your whole life, in that you are like really quite masterful in finding like, I think a level of like contentment just in an ongoing basis. That's like rather admirable. Contentment makes it sound like you're like, not aspiring to other great things, which I do know, in fact, you of course do. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to say that you've like set the bar low for yourself and you're just happy to like live there.
Right.
Which is maybe how it sounded, but.
No, that's not how I thought it sounded.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
My bad for suggesting it at all.
No, you're good. I honestly, it's interesting that you would point this out, because I don't think I have noticed that about myself, that I don't ask for advice.
Well, you don't seem to dwell on things in the same way that I feel like almost at any point in time, I'm usually like hyper aware of it's like the biggest problem that you have going on in your life, regardless of how big that problem is relative to other problems of the world, always does feel like the biggest problem you're facing at that point in time. And so for me, this has always been the case of like, it's almost like as I've knocked down like one obstacle after another in life, it almost, what happens is I just allow the next new problem to elevate to the status of my new biggest problem.
Okay.
So it's almost like no matter how small the new biggest problem may be, I treat it's a one size fits all category.
Right.
So like my biggest problem is always filling the same void. It takes the same amount of like attention from me at all times. And so like always, like it doesn't matter how many things I like can fix or defeat or overcome, I will always become like sort of focused on like, okay, now this is the real issue now.
Right. Like if you have one problem, like that someone slammed into your car, that's like a pretty big problem.
Yes.
But on the other hand, if you like, you know, dropped your coffee mug and the handle broke off, like whichever problem's in front of you is the same size problem.
Well, it's not like whatever problem is necessarily in front of me. It's not like a proximity thing. It's mostly like,
yeah, no, but like this is the one you're like when it becomes the thing that you're working on, it may as well be the same level.
Exactly. It's like my brain doesn't like a scenario. It almost feels like I've put my guard down way too much. At any point in time, if I cease to be extremely concerned about something, like it's almost like an ongoing, like you're extremely suspicious of all of the circumstances in your life to the point where it's like something's wrong. Like there's no way that I can just like sit here and like feel comfy and secure and content because something is wrong.
That just sounds like bananas to me.
Just bananas.
That just sounds crazy talk to me.
Yeah.
Yes. Like I can't even fathom how you're like existing like that.
Oh, it's exhausting.
It sounds exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah. It consumes a lot of my thoughts all the time.
Okay. Well, I don't know if this helps, but this is, I've been trying to think about this while you've been talking, and I think I don't know when it was, but I remember at some point in my life realizing like one basic truth that is true like 95% of the time.
Okay.
For almost every single problem that you ever come across. And this is going to sound really basic and generic, but it's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay.
Like it's going to be okay. Like whatever it is, it's fine. It's like it's not a big deal. All things are not a big deal.
All things are not a big deal.
Nothing is a big deal.
Interesting.
And when something is a big deal, it will be really obvious. But for the most part, nothing's a big deal.
Like, interesting.
You can let just everything go.
I like cannot. To me, that feels like bananas. Like to me, like that would be like it would be so hard for me.
Who needs all the advice?
Well, that's a fair question. What I really need is to be able to talk to somebody. And if nobody's talking, then I have to fill the void by asking for advice.
I talk to myself a lot, if that helps.
Do you have conversations out loud to yourself?
Absolutely. All the time I have conversations. Like when I'm driving, I talk to myself out loud frequently.
Yeah.
Or like if like a lot of times during quarantine, when I would just be, you know, in the basement working on whatever, I would just get up and start pacing around like the basement, and I'd just sort of like work things out loud to myself.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yep. I do the same thing. Okay. I actually do find that extremely productive. I've talked about this before with my brain and the way that it works. But it's got a very like limited cache. Like the amount of like available space for like easy access information is like hyper limited. So an example of this was I was watching the movie Into the Woods the other day, and the headmaster from Beauxbatons in the Harry Potter books is
Madame Maxime.
That's the one. Yeah. Yes. So she is a character the actress is a character who is also just by coincidence a giant in that movie as well. And I, as soon as I spotted her, I was like, oh my gosh, I know who that is. That is, I have read the Harry Potter books 100 times. And nothing,
right?
Like nothing. It's like zapped from my brain. Like that's what I mean by like the cache. So it's like if we were working on a Harry Potter theory specifically about like all things related to the French corner of the wizarding world, of course I would know it. Like top of mind.
Yeah.
Easy access. No problem at all. Would be able to, you know, really like dive into all of that information. But it's like I have to like, you know, enter that like loading screen and wait for the information, the full page to load and all of that. Maybe my brain desk is slowly turning into like a 1995 like home computer, you know, like on dial up though.
Right. Yeah. You got to like go through the whole system.
It's rather slow.
Make sure no one's on the phone.
Exactly.
I don't think people remember that part of the old internet is that it was through your phone. So if someone called the house while you were on the internet,
oh, it kicked you right off. Yes. Like yes.
Someone outside could stop you from being on the internet.
It occurs to me all the time that we are reaching a stage in life where it is much, much, much more likely that people have absolutely no recollection or memory of that at all because it happened before they were alive.
Yeah, that's happening.
So that's,
we're getting old.
That's like one of those things getting you have old, to like Ben. Come to
all
grips
these,
with.
All these young TikTokers out there.
Why all of a sudden like the halfway New Jersey accent?
Yeah, I don't know. It just feels like we're like the accent that talks about young kids in a negative way.
Oh, I got you. Do you think that's because like our entire extended family is like from like New York region?
No, I mean, I don't think that necessarily our extended family has constantly been, you know, raining insults on the youngest generation or anything.
Sure.
I think this is just a byproduct of the attitude many New York, New Jersey people are given in movies by writers.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Good clarification. Okay. Go. So moving on though. So going back to your perfect contentment life.
That's me. Always happy all the time.
Always happy all the time. Just
nothing's ever going wrong in my life.
You are a bag full of Jolly Ranchers as far as I'm concerned.
Wow. Sounds nice.
I know. Not so bad.
Sticky.
A little bit too hard. I don't like Jolly Ranchers, to be honest with you. I think it's a really good phrase. Your life is like a bag full of Jolly Ranchers because they're jolly and that makes me happy.
Every time I go to the eye doctor, they have a bowl of Jolly Ranchers and I'm always like, I'm gonna try and take more than one and see if the desk lady notices. I'm like, I really want those Jolly Ranchers. And then I get in the car and I'm like, these aren't that good.
No, they really aren't.
Yeah, they're not that good.
As soon as they get into your teeth, they are now cavities. As far as I'm concerned, 100% of the cavities of the planet are caused by Jolly Ranchers stuck in teeth.
Right, because people try and like chew them too late and then they just get stuck on there. And that's the problem. It's not like you're not doing a good job brushing. It's that the Jolly Rancher is literally fused to your teeth and is constantly delivering sugary, cavity-giving destruction at all times.
Exactly. Like, yeah. I'm pretty sure that the Jolly Ranchers actually have, this is not verified by the FDA, by the way, sure, but I'm pretty sure that Jolly Ranchers have tiny microscopic drills that they incorporate into the hard candy itself.
Often imagine like microorganisms as having appendages.
Yes.
They have flourishing cities. You know.
Of course.
Yeah, with like fully thought. Do you ever think about, sometimes I'm like, what if we are just like, what if the earth itself is but like an atom on some other you know, gigantic organism we can't even fathom.
To say that this hasn't been the biggest problem in my life and I have spent hours of my life focused on it, it would be an understatement.
Like, hours of your life focused? How is this a problem?
Oh, because it's such concern. It's like, okay, time is relative, right? So like we've lived these like entire existences and everything,
yeah.
Like generations upon generations upon generations, the dinosaurs and like all this other stuff. And it's like, what if it's like literally like a millisecond inside of like some gigantic mega being and we're just about to be crushed and all of the existence that we've ever known, it could just like instantly just cease.
But Ben, let me tell you something.
Yeah, what's that?
It doesn't matter. It's going to be okay. Because you know what? If we ended, if everything about your life and the entire world ended 20 seconds from now, and it's just over, then guess what? You didn't see it coming and it's over.
Well, that's true.
Doesn't matter. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. You can't.
No time to be concerned.
No time to be concerned. It's just over. Boom.
You were so delighted about it.
I'm not delighted about it. I'm just not like not worried about it. Like it's crossed my mind. Like, wouldn't that be interesting? But in the same way that I'm like, what if that's also true of like this, right? Like I just gone.
Shattered an entire conversation.
Who knows how many Earths live inside the popcorn, right? You know?
Jay, I can't believe you just did that. You intentionally just destroyed an entire civilization.
Who's to say?
That lived inside of that popcorn culture one true host trophy. Yeah. So anyway, going back to my original question that you've evaded very effectively so far.
I don't think, go ahead. What was the original question?
Well, no, I haven't even asked it yet. So yeah.
So am I evading it?
You were anticipating and evading in advance.
Okay.
So the question is, what would your midlife crisis look like? So if you were like, so I think, and this is like the best hindsight that I have. And Dad, if you're listening, apologies in advance.
Mm-hmm.
I think our dad had a midlife crisis at one point in time, and he went out and bought a 1996 BMW Z3 convertible.
Yeah, like it's a James Bond car.
Yeah. It actually, I really loved the car. It was extremely fun to drive.
Yeah, from like my perspective as his son, like had no idea that was happening. It was just like, cool, dad got an awesome sports car. Great.
Oh my God, my mind was blown. I remember the moment I was at Famous Anthony's when he rolled up in it. And like, I remember looking out the window and my jaw hitting the floor.
Yeah.
Because it was like, to me, it was unachievable for like, it never occurred to me that we could own a sports car.
Right.
You know, like that, I was like, that's impossible. We're not that type of family. We can't own sports cars. And like, the thing was, is that it was a used sports car.
Sure.
And I don't think that it was like horrendously expensive or anything crazy like that. But in my mind, it was like, that's as far as the reaches of it would go, was like, we own a sports car. Like,
right.
You know, and as I mean, it could have been the Z3, a used Z3 or a brand new Lamborghini. And it would have meant the exact same thing to me.
Right.
Like that was like what it's like. We just entered a new club. we own sports cars.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. I too thought it was like really, really cool.
Yeah.
You know, that the dad owned this car. But like what I mean is, as a kid, it wasn't apparent to me that the reason that dad had decided to get that car was like as a part of like a midlife crisis or anything.
Sure. And I mean I've wondered about that a lot too, like how aware are people when that is happening,
right?
That what is happening is that you're having a midlife crisis, because the whole idea behind them anyway feels like it just makes plenty of sense. It's effectively that some amount of common average age to becoming, you know, like married, having kids, and then having your kids be old enough to be largely self-sufficient would land you probably right in that sweet spot of like when you've like had like a full-blown career.
Mm-hmm.
and maybe like at for the first time both the time and disposable income to go and buy something nice for yourself. So like people call it a midlife crisis, but what I really think it is that like you've just reached a point where you're starting to like have a lot of the pieces of the puzzle come together and you can go do something like that.
Yeah, that is always, I mean, and who's to say? I don't know. But my, like, maybe I'm just not old enough yet. But sure. My opinion has, I've always felt like midlife crises are like not real. Like that's not a real thing.
Okay.
Like, I'm sure people experience it and they get to a point in their life where they're like, what have I done? What is the point of me? How will I leave a mark? What am I doing here? Like,
but you know that it doesn't matter.
Well, I'll get to it. I'll get to it. But to me, it's always seemed like exactly what you just said, that like, I'm not sure if it's always felt much more likely to me that what's really happening is that when people reach a certain point in their life, they are finally at a point where they've had a career for long enough and their kids have stopped requiring so much financial like support.
Sure.
To the point where like, or you've just been like, you know, putting money away long enough that actually, exactly what you said, that like now you just are at the point where you had enough discretionary income to buy something nice for yourself. So you did.
Yes.
Now, yeah. Whether it has to do with making yourself feel younger, or like, you know, the most classic midlife crisis is of course a car.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, to me, yeah, it never felt like dad felt like I need to recapture my youth.
No. Agreed yeah. Completely. And that's where I think like largely what's really happening. And this is where like, I haven't gotten to this point in my life yet, but it would almost be, yeah, like you, like being a parent and like raising your family and doing these things are like so hands-on and so all the time that like maybe the other aspect of what's really happening with it is that like you're finally like looking up, you know, and like taking your focus away from this thing that has very much required so much focus for so many years,
right?
That almost what's left is like, okay, what was the last thing? Like, how do I start to now focus on the last thing that would have been an aspiration of mine? And it's almost like you go back to the thing that you would have thought was cool when you were 24.
Maybe that's exactly it's like, I remember wanting this and I've wanted it for a long time. And now guess what? It's happening.
Right, I'm getting that used BMW Z3 ragtop convertible.
That's right. So what was I really into at the age of like 25 or something?
It feels like they're all exactly the same things as they are today. I feel like
that's the thing. I'm like, yeah, I don't know if there's anything. I have thought before, like it would be fun someday to try and get another model of the same like first car I had.
Okay.
To get, which was like an 87 Jeep Cherokee. It was black 87 Jeep Cherokee, not Grand Cherokee, just boxy, super boxy, but it was black with gold trim. And it was, it was just like my first car. So I'm like, oh, it'd be very cool to have like one that, of course, like by the time I would get to a point, you know, it'd be super old.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like how well could it possibly run? But it would just be for like the novelty of like, oh yeah, this was my first car and now I have it again.
I think that if we still owned that car at this point in time, it would literally be deemed like an antique.
Probably.
Because I think a car has to be 30 years old in order to like reach antique status.
Wow.
So it would be of age.
It occurs to me it would not, I don't know, maybe someone, or maybe you know, like how difficult it might be to track down the specific car itself.
Oh my gosh, know? Like the car?
Like the actual same car.
I have no idea how difficult that would be. My guess is with how many miles that car had on it, that it is.
It no longer exists.
It no longer exists.
It seems very possible, but because what became of it? I think it was traded in for the next car. So it would take some digging to see, I don't even know what dealership it was traded to. And then you'd have to call them and see if they had records of who it was sold to. But it feels possible.
It feels possible. I think if you could find the VIN number, you could probably find the vehicle.
Yeah.
Because surely it would have like a service report if it was still somewhere.
Hmm. And I'm not really that super duper interested in it, but just the idea of it seems like fun.
It does seem like fun.
Yeah.
It does seem like fun. It would be really cool to like see what if it has still withstood the test of time since you last had it, because we took it pretty much everywhere.
We did. It gosh, we were driving past the entrance to where we used to go four-wheeling, like up on the pipeline.
Oh yeah,
as it were.
Yep.
And I was remembering that before, like we were pretty successful doing it in the Trooper, which you drove.
That was in my first car.
And yeah, that was your Trooper. First go. Yeah. And you know, but my first car was the Jeep, or the Jep, as we affectionately called it, because it was missing an E off the front.
Yep.
You know, classic. I think in our minds as teenagers, like all I'd ever thought of as a Jeep was off-road.
Yeah,
like, naturally. All Jeeps are off-road capable, and that's mostly why they are built and what they are for.
Yes.
This was the opinion of like 16, 17-year-old me and how I understood Jeeps and their purpose in the world.
Right.
So despite it being really old, even when I had it, we tried to take it up this what has to be a pretty technical little climb into the trail itself.
I wonder if we could find pictures of it, of the trooper doing it.
Probably we could.
I know they exist somewhere.
Yeah. We were not successful, and I think we tried a bunch there. Like, we would just like, maybe we just need to go faster.
This is the thing with us as 16-year-olds with cars, and it like, it was so not the best.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know how like you would take like Hot Wheels cars when you were a kid and like ram them into each other and it would sort of be like, the car is fine.
Ben, just this very past weekend, let me tell you that me and Luke has all these mega blocks.
Okay.
Which are only acceptable when you're under the age of 5, at which point Legos become the absolute only answer to connectable play toys.
I'm so glad you clarified, because I'm sure that the people at home were about to be like, mega blocks.
Yeah. Let me just say, we play with the jumbo mega blocks, which I will say are probably, I like them better than the Duplo.
Okay.
Than the Lego Duplo. Okay. However, once you progress to like assembly kits or whatever that are like Lego size, like traditional Lego sizes or whatever you think of as Legos, Mega Bloks version of that is awful. And you should always buy Legos instead. But for kids, the Mega Bloks are good. That's not the point of the story. The point is, we had our trusty Hot Wheels ramp set up as usual in the house.
Yeah.
And Luke has he also has like a train set. It's like a Brio train set, which is like these wooden tracks and you can roll the, you know, trains through the tracks or whatever. And on one of the sets he has, it came with like a tree with like a monkey on it. And one of the train cars is supposed to look like a bananas, I guess. It's just a yellow cube with a magnet on it. But if you drive it under the monkey will take it off the train.
Oh,
very fun. It does not look like he stole bananas at all, but it's still whatever. It's cool. Anyway. So I was refusing to call it bananas because it looks like a yellow cube. So I was calling it cheese.
Okay.
And we were putting that.
You were refusing per like Luke's rules of the game.
No. I was refusing per, this is like a step too far, even for a kid's imagination, for them to imagine this yellow cube as bananas.
Well, because when I was playing with Luke over the weekend, I had him convinced that the blue Lego was a popsicle. So
okay. Hey,
maybe I was not doing a good.
No, that's fine. That's fine. You know, let him imagine whatever he wants, but I was refusing myself to call it bananas.
Okay.
So I was calling it cheese, and we were putting the cheese as well as some other mega blocks just on the Hot Wheels track.
Okay.
Sacking them nice and precarious, sending a car down the track, just letting it boom explode into it. I could not believe the quality explosions we were getting out of these mega blocks in the car.
Outstanding.
It reminded me of like when you watch a like an action figure commercial like that's like on TV, like inevitably at some point there was like a wall of bricks that the character would come slamming through, and it always looks so cool. And like,
oh man, yeah,
I want to do that. But it's like, where do you buy the bricks? Like, where do you get the bricks that guy crashed through in the commercial?
Yeah.
This was always like a concern of mine as a kid. Like, that looks so fun. I would like the bricks to play with.
I would. Like, right.
How can I get, I've got the toy. Now I want to do that. And those parts don't seem purchasable.
Yes. That's true. That was actually, I always felt that exact same way about like Nerf guns.
Yeah.
Was that like, they would always like advertise them and they would be like on these like catwalks and like, you know, it was like
they'd have dry ice and laser beams going all over the place.
Right. Like who is setting this up? Is this a service that we could have paid for? Because if so, I would have very much liked that.
Yeah, that it was like a way cooler than shooting Nerf guns at each other from across the living room.
And then going and like picking up the
bullets. Yeah, then you had to pick up the darts.
I've got to reload.
All the darts are different per every gun.
Yep.
I think they fixed a lot of those problems now. I think a lot of the darts are interchangeable throughout everything.
But oh, I see. That's a lot better. That's a lot better.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the point is though that like in the same way that if you were a child smashing two cars together and having no concern that the car could like potentially break.
Yeah.
I feel that is exactly how we treated our actual first vehicles when we were 16 years old and like learning to drive and out on our own, is that like it, the idea of the car's potential to break despite taking it through like extremely rigorous circumstances,
right,
was not of concern.
Oh, I agree. I was thinking about this exact thing over the weekend, just like walking through my house, like remembering the thought that like as a kid, the idea that something could knock over your house, impossible.
Yeah.
Like your house is pretty much indestructible.
Yes.
Yeah. Nothing could happen to it no matter what.
Now have you changed minds on that?
Well, I feel like, you know, if you took a hammer to any given wall, you could just put a hole in that wall.
Okay.
No problem. Whereas like when I was a kid, walls felt like impervious.
Sure. Nothing could take them down. But that's the thing too, is that I remember this was something like once upon a time I was building an aquarium display for a home expo. So it was like the Roanoke Home and Garden Show or something. And we were trying to like showcase, like put an aquarium in your wall.
Yeah.
So I built a stud wall, you know, out of like 2x4s and such, and like drywalled it and like put the aquarium like into it so you could like walk up to it and it would be like all framed in and stuff and you could, you know, see it, whatever. But that was like, you know, I was like, oh, now I know how to build a wall. And it was like, there is no way that in all these movies, people are like throwing each other through the walls. Like that would not happen.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, you know, drywall itself is not hard to break through. And the reason that like, if you've ever seen somebody like punch drywall and like break it, it's like, that's really not that big of like a feat. But going through the studs themselves would be darn near impossible.
Yeah.
So like, again, I don't know how I keep bringing it up week in, week out. Maybe it's a new running segment, but like the Fast and the Furious has like tons of scenes like this where they'll like throw each other like through a wall and like they're wrestling and it's like, whoa, crazy. And it's no, absolutely. It's like that wall was fake. There were no studs in that wall.
No studs in that wall.
That is the only way that you're able to go through it. And at that rate, like, it's not even that impressive.
There were only studs going through that wall. Am I right?
Nailed it, y'all.
You nailed it.
I will give you a 10 out of 10. Stuck the landing.
Woo!
That was very good.
Thank you.
That was very good.
Thank you. No, you're totally right. Unless the point they're trying to make is these guys are so strong, they're throwing people through the studs.
Right.
Which is like, no, they're not.
No, yeah. I'm sorry, but no. Yeah. I disagree.
It's like, I agree. Yes, Vin Diesel, very strong, but still just regular person.
Yes. Yeah. Not superhero yet.
Yeah.
Has not joined the MCU yet.
Yet. You know it's coming. The Fast and the Furious phenomenon.
The paradox.
The paradox. Yeah, the phenomenon has the, you know, the triple F.
Okay.
You know.
Well, either way. So, yes, off-roading, in cars, in the Jeep.
Yeah.
And
we didn't manage to ever get the Jeep up that particular road, but I do remember taking it off-roading, quote unquote, quite a bit.
Okay, so here's the other thing about this though. So like, you've no doubt on the road seeing like the mega lifted, like, you know, Jeep Wranglers, you know, with the all the bumpers and the lights and like the whole nine yards, the escape gear, like, I don't know. There's like tons of things that you can like snap onto the side of your vehicle. This, and for me, aspirations out the wazoo. Mm-hmm. Like my midlife crisis will probably be exactly that. Like,
okay.
You know, I actually, this is the other thing too. I've talked about here recently is in high school, I was also the guy in my Isuzu Trooper. I had like the huge like subwoofers and stuff, like the really loud, like license plate rattling, like,
right.
You know, you're next to him at the traffic light and you're like, this is obnoxious. You know what? I love it. I love it so much.
Yeah.
Like, I know that it is obnoxious. I know that it is ridiculous. I know that it is like, it does not make me look cool, but like, it's like, regardless of the fact that people think it makes them look cool and it is not true, I still love it.
Right.
And so at some point in time, I will once again have just gigantic subwoofers and a giant, absurdly lifted vehicle. All that to say though, when I was in high school, the thing that like blows my mind is I had a stock Isuzu Trooper.
Yeah.
Like it was, I mean, like sport, you know,
yeah,
like, you know,
the sport model,
but like otherwise there was nothing special about it. It didn't even have like mud tires, off-road tires. They were just SUV tires.
It had access to four-wheel drive.
It had four low, which is like, you know, either there's four-wheel high, which you can drive like fast, and there's four-wheel low where it's like, okay, now we mean business.
Right.
Like, as far as I was concerned, if I put it in four-wheel low, I could have driven up the side of the Empire State Building if I wanted to.
No problem.
Like, there is nothing four-low can't do. And it was even one of those things where I feel like it was almost as if I was like in like a superhero movie where it was like, we got to call in the big guns. Like, are we that stuck? Do I need to put it in four low. As if it took any more effort than shifting it into that position.
Right.
Not that hard. But I remember that being like one of those things where, or even now seeing these big lifted vehicles is minded everything that I couldn't imagine asking it to do more than what it did. So I'm like, what are all these lift kits doing for people?
It's just a hobby.
You know?
It's just about the looks.
I can't just be the looks.
I don't know. I mean, maybe they're actually putting it through their paces.
Maybe what we were doing was just really not that hard.
Maybe that's true too. It wasn't, but my Jeep couldn't make it up it.
That's okay though, because eventually you'll track it down and you'll beef it up.
That's right. We're gonna get a lift on that 87 Cherokee bed.
I can't even tell you how much I cannot imagine a scenario where 44-year-old Jonathan Carlin in his yard has a 1987 Jeep Cherokee leaking oil. Like in the driveway.
I wouldn't do oil changes then.
No. I know that. But that car is leaking oil. Wherever it is sitting right now, oil is dripping out of it.
I see.
Not on purpose. Not as a feature of the car. Just as an unfortunate side effect of its many years of...
Many years on the road. Tearing it up.
Well, it makes me happy to know that at the very least that there's something out there.
That's not even like the thing that I would... Like, I don't even think that would be the answer to like, what would my midlife crisis be? It's just like, that's my answer to cars I've thought about.
Okay. So as long as we're thinking like 10 years ahead, let's think 10 years backward, because you have a note here in our show notes to discuss your love-hate relationship with TikTok.
Oh, I mean, my guess is that everyone has this relationship with TikTok.
More than likely.
My love-hate relationship with it is that I think it's pretty self-explanatory, is that when I'm on TikTok, it's very enjoyable to like watch a thing. It's a very positive like app and social media platform.
That is what I have to say about it above all else. So like, because we can tie this into another thing that I want to talk about today, because for me, all through like pandemic, quarantine,
yeah,
all the stuff, I've tried to really keep like either a low profile or completely off certain social media sites.
Yeah.
Because it was just getting to the point where it was like just dragging me down like a gigantic anchor.
Yeah.
So like I deleted Facebook, I deleted Twitter, like from my, you know, devices and stuff like that. I don't get on them.
Oh, can I just say as a quick throwback to last week that last week I was like whinging about how Facebook wouldn't let you download entire albums at the same time.
And then by the time the episode went live.
The episode went live, that feature had been added. So
how about it?
There you go. Well done, Facebook. You brought back a feature you never needed to delete to begin with. But rest assured, I will be downloading all of my albums and then deleting them.
What a feat.
That's right. We're taking Facebook. That would be so interesting if you just delete, if I just cleared everything, just like, I'm just going to fresh start
Facebook.
Like, but then at the same time, I was like, I'm not even on Facebook. Oh boy. Okay. Anyway, TikTok. That's what we're talking about.
TikTok, Twitter, Facebook,
social media platforms. People use.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So anyway, yes, I feel like you go onto Twitter, you go onto Facebook. These are likely places where you're going to leave sad or upset or frustrated. Yes. I feel like you go on TikTok and there's next to no chance that you're walking away from TikTok being like angry.
Well, see, the thing about like Twitter and Facebook, at least the way I use them, is that normally I'm following people I know in some capacity or have met before.
Sure.
Or I've just been like following their like, you know, YouTube career, their creators I watch or whatever, or something like that.
Yes.
You know, especially on Facebook, it's like, these are people I know. So I think it's especially bad when you walk away feeling like, man, people I know are that awful.
Sure.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Didn't know. Now I know. Twitter, everyone knows, it's just like a negative void that never stops with its terribleness and the ways it can bring you down. But TikTok, I don't really use the follow feature basically at all.
Okay.
You know, I'm just scrolling the For You page and whatever it delivers to me is whatever it delivers to me.
Okay.
You know,
I'm sure there's an algorithm involved with that based on...
I am 1,000% sure there's an algorithm involved in it. Because sure, I mean, this is the thing about TikTok is one, it's never people I know, you know, rarely people I know. So I think that helps. It's like, you're not having this impression of someone you already know in real life.
Right.
That might be some like horrible negative hot take there posting up for the world to see.
Sure.
Yeah. But also, like, I think the problem is, you know, people, either you can get your, here's the problem, is that you find like a good TikTok and you're like, oh, that was so good. That was so clever. That was an awesome dance, or that was an awesome joke or a fun story or whatever. And then you're like, you immediately want more of that. You're like, that was so good. I bet they can deliver it to me again. And so you scroll to the next one and you're just like, I feel like I'm constantly waiting for something to be as good as the first thing that entertained me.
Interesting. Okay.
And it's like, you have to watch each thing for a few seconds just to understand like what it is. Am I interested in watching the whole thing? It's amazing to me how quickly you can decide yes or no on it.
Oh, that is fascinating. I remember back when Vine was a phenomenon, like people would talk about getting bored inside of like a 6 second clip.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I was like, 6 seconds. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you can give anything a chance for 6 seconds. And you're absolutely right. It's like,
nope.
You get like 2-3 seconds in. It's like, this is not for me.
Not for me. But so, actually, I've taken that mentality. I've taken this lesson from TikTok to heart a lot when I've been trying to write scripts for Super Carlin Brothers lately. Like, I need to get to my thesis statement for this video fast.
Stat pronto. Like,
stat. I mean, and the benefit on YouTube is at the very least that you have the title and the thumbnail as well.
Okay.
So even if you don't like immediately say, this is what I'm talking about, like people will know this is what you will be talking about.
It's true. The method of discovery is a lot different where TikTok, like you're starting video going, you're not like clicking on titles and being like, oh, exactly. That one seems interesting.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the other thing is that I think it's and a different feature of TikTok is I'm never like searching through people's feeds like, oh, this thumbnail looks good. It's not like I'm scrolling through my Netflix. Like, do I want to watch this? It's just like, it'd be like if you open Netflix and it was just like, we're into a show.
Right.
You're like, next. But yeah, that's very, very much how TikTok is. But it's like, the problem is you're looking for like a good, funny one to watch or whatever, something that's going to entertain you. And you're deciding over and over whether this is good enough. And if you eventually land on one that is good enough to watch all the way through, then the search is just immediately restarted. Like, it's like, that was great. Now again. And it's like, nope, not this one. Yay. Now again. And it's like, you're constantly stuck in this loop of like always looking for the next one. And the one that is actually you're looking for is only as good as like the first time you see it. And in the meantime, like it's hard to be on TikTok for like less than 15 minutes, almost no matter what.
Sure.
Like, as soon as you open the app, you are just like, that's the real love-hate relationship with it. Is that like, I don't even mind looking for the thing or finding good TikToks or whatever, but it sucks the time away from you so fast, like no other social media app. And I'm not sure what about it is like makes it go so much faster, or if it's that like, each one is 1 minute, like, or can be up to a minute.
Yep.
So, you know, if you've watched 20 TikToks, that doesn't sound like a lot.
But it very likely is.
But it likely was at least, 15 to 20 minutes.
Right.
You know, especially if you watched, you know, full talks or whatever.
Full talks.
Full talk. You went full talk on that thing.
Right. I feel like eventually there's going to be like detox programs.
Oh, detoxing. Yes, 10 out of 10 on that one. That was amazing. Oh, how do you detox? Wow, what a great phrase.
What a great phrase. Yeah.
That sounds
like
the title of a book.
It seems like it could be.
Yeah.
Seems like written by Ben Carlin.
Yeah. Right there. Co-author, Jonathan Carlin.
Nice. Okay, we can do that. That sounds like fun.
But I think that's the problem is that like I like it, but at the same time it just takes so much of my time and it's so hard to like I will stare at the app and I'll be like, I almost like, do I want to open it? Because if I open it, it's going to be 15 minutes from now. Like,
oh yeah, you know, no, what I mean? I have the same dilemma with it where it's definitely one of those where like I almost frequently have to like, it's very like specific. Like if I'm like home alone on a Saturday and I'm like sitting down to like make my lunch or whatever. And it's like, okay, I've got like, you know, 20, 30 minutes. I'm just going to sit here. Like I'm going to open it up, lean it against like, you know, my salt shaker on my dining room table. And I'm just going to let it roll, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, and I'll be like, okay, I'm killing two birds with one stone right now. And this is like the time I have dedicated to do this. But I mean, there is something to be said, and this is not me being like smart at all, but there is almost like the addiction to the dopamine hit that comes from any of these social media sites. Like the reason that you kind of have that itch to like pull out your phone is almost like, it's like, I'm a little bored.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, I can fix my boredom very fast.
Right.
And that is like, I've wondered about this so frequently, like what is the potential effect from being able to do that at all times? And then how much less tolerant does it make you of boredom at all other moments of your life?
Yeah.
Like how well do we, as like people, are we even remotely trained to handle boredom?
It I mean, you know, the advent of smartphones in everyday life definitely makes boredom an instantly, like, it's not something you have to deal with anymore. Like, I remember growing up, like, on weekends, just, you know, if we weren't, like, going anywhere, if there wasn't, like, a game or a meet or something, just being like, I'm bored. Like, what am I gonna, like, I just need something to do.
Yes.
Like, there's nothing on TV. I don't want to play any of the video games we have. There's no friends around. It's just too hot outside.
I can hear all of these complaints from, like, 11-year-old us.
Right. It's just like that. But today, you don't have to deal with that. No matter what, you could sit down and pull your phone out. And it's like, I don't know if that's a good thing. Like, I think boredom, like, sometimes when, like, I'm taking a shower, like, if I'm in the middle of, like, reading a book and I'm really into it, I'll, like, you know, put my, I'll, like, bring my phone and I'll just, like, set it up there and just listen while I'm in there. But there are times, like, this morning, I'm like, I'm not really listening to anything in particular right now. I've just sort of been floating through some podcasts and stuff. But at the moment, I'm not, like, specifically listening to anything. So I was, like, standing there, I'm, like, trying to, like, I gotta find something to listen to. And I'm, like, do I want to? Maybe it's better if I just sit here and I'm alone with my thoughts for however long the shower is.
Sure. Like,
do I need entertainment at every moment? And I think the answer is no. And I think it's better probably if you're not constantly having something distracting you or entertaining you or whatever.
Right. Yes. No. And I think that that's absolutely correct, but it is recognizing, I think, those moments where it's like, I'm going to, like, unplug. I'm going to just go and do something, like, almost very intentionally without having, like, a secondary entertaining factor involved. Cause I'm very much the same way. Like, on the weekends, like, I do, like, all of my yard work or activities or chores around the house or whatever the case may be, but I'll have my headphones on the entire day.
Right.
And, you know, I'm like taking in my book or whatever the case may be. So it's like, no matter what I'm doing, I'm like also entertaining myself at least a little bit with something like that. But the other thing I guess I associate typically with boredom was the inability as a child to like just have the freedom to go and do something.
That's I guess the other half of it. When you're a kid, like, you are less in control as opposed to when you're an adult,
where you could just go. Yeah.
Yeah. You can solve it a little easier.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, but yeah, that's the other thing too, because it feels sort of like the double-edged sword, because you see when you're like consuming all of this stuff, what you're seeing is an enormous amount of creativity on display.
Yeah.
Like the people who are creating things, it's like, whoa, like you did something really, really neat. Like that was so remarkable. Like that was so like special or well-made or like well considered or well thought out. Like people are definitely, it's like, are we living in a world that is like ripe with artistic expression, or are we living in a world where it's dying, or is it somehow both?
Right. It's just like, yeah, that's a very interesting question. Like, is like modern day TikTok, like it is a very creative form of expression. But it's like, what, I don't know. Like, I feel like it feels like art, like, capital A is like normally has some sort of like commentary attached to it.
Sure.
In some way. It's not like, I just made a thing, look at it.
It's cool. Right. Okay. Yeah. So I had this conversation once before in a very, I don't really stand by the idea now, but at the time I did. But we're going through an age where I feel like one of the largest, most prominently consumed pieces of art, if you want to use the capital A art word there, is sort of like this big screen media, whether that's movies or television series, long form television series, mini series, things like that. Like, I feel like we are going through the era where like people are kind of discovering for the first time, like you can tell, I mean, WandaVision, for example, you can tell, you know, what would be an extremely long movie where almost part of the fun of it is like there are these big chapters of it. It starts, it ends.
Right.
If it was all played back to back to back to back to back and just like, you know, 4 hours of straight content, it might not play that well at all. But like almost even the idea that like a single episode might end with like a cliffhanger or whatever, like makes you want that much more to pick it back up.
Yeah.
It's almost like there's like these like little sparks, there's little jolts, there's like whatever that sort of like it is able to bring your interest back to the surface where you're like, ooh, and the episode ended. It's like they're using endings as like portions of how to tell story. If that makes sense. But all that to say, sorry, I'm going somewhere with it, is that you've got, it's an art form that I think is reaching its prime. It's going through a golden era. There's like all sorts of really, really strong stuff that exists out there. And it almost makes me wonder if it's like a renaissance of sorts where like, if we're 200 years in the future and we're reviewing the 2000s, you know, the early 2000s,
yeah,
as a time period in form of artistic expression, will there be something that like can stand the test of time and sort of be like the iconic, this was the special thing in art that was created during this era? Like no one has ever been able to do it as well as it was done during that period of time. It's like Renaissance,
like Renaissance streaming or something,
like Renaissance streaming,
like binge, like content that was made to be binge watched.
Maybe not even binge watched so much as just very, it's like having the technology and the stories that are still original enough to where they're being like executed extraordinarily well, maybe like in some cases for the first time. So like what I would compare it to is almost like, you know, the Mona Lisa is sort of this example of like a painting that is world known and like represents a very specific time in artistic expression.
Okay.
Because like oil painting was a big deal. Is the Mona Lisa an oil painting?
You're disproving your own point, dear.
I'm disproving my own point. The point is that it's a piece of artwork that everybody knows.
Yeah.
And it's like, is there the possibility? Is there the potential for something that we are witnessing being created right now to be so good that it can last for so long that like 200 years from now, 300 years from now, people will look back on it and be like, oh yeah, that was the time period when blank was created. Like, you know, and then that's what makes it so iconic. Like right now, we're way too close to it. It just happened. Everything, like, you know, to call anything what will be a forever in the span of humanity,
right,
classic, not in the span of our lifetime.
Right.
I don't know. It's interesting to me to see or to wonder what that could be. And I think at one point in time, the first show that I really remember catching extreme fire with people where it was like, this is a phenomenon, like something is happening, everyone's watching, was Game of Thrones.
Sure.
And that, and maybe it wasn't even the first example of this, but like prior to that, like I remember watching the series finale of like Friends, but like I didn't go to school the next day and like every single person I knew also watched the season finale of Friends. It was like, it was a big deal in our household, and I'm sure it was the big deal in a lot of households.
Yeah, I would say maybe like high school boys wasn't necessarily the target demographic for Friends when it was on. And I would say the big difference, I have a couple of theories here as to what's going on, is that back in like the age of, you know, whenever Friends was on, in the 90s, early 2000s, streaming did not exist. So all new television was consumed on a week to week basis.
Sure.
It's like every Thursday at 8, Friends on NBC. Whoa, hilarious.
Right. Like that's how you got to see it.
That's how you got to see it. That's how everything was experienced. Moving forward into the age of streaming, just like very much not the case. Like you choose the schedule. Like
sure.
You don't have to wait a week anymore. We release whole season at once all the time. Boom.
Sure.
That's how it's done. And so I think what happened is you had like this gap period of time where binging shows became the new normal and you didn't have this like weekly release schedule anymore. Like if a new show came out, it was like, I know what we're doing this weekend. We're watching the new season of House of Cards or whatever it was.
Sure.
But then just out of nowhere, you had Game of Thrones happen and they happened to have like this hyper popular show, but they weren't dropping it in the same way that everyone else was dropping it, where it was like a whole season at once.
Right.
They were still using the old formula of once a week. And because it was the most popular show and because it wasn't all coming out at once, it like recaptured the magic of once a week releases.
And like the anticipation.
That, and the anticipation yeah. that like, I would say a whole generation of people just had not experienced, or that people had forgotten about how to experience.
Sure.
You know, because even there are even streaming shows that would release like once a week or whatever. Like Beth and I used to watch a show called The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu. And I think that came out like once a week. But that... And while that was a very popular show, it wasn't like popular to the point of Game of Thrones. It was like everyone is looking right now. And everyone, it's like this cultural phenomenon that is happening. And I think part of what made it a phenomenon is that they were doing week to week in a time where streaming services were dropping whole seasons at a time. And I think that's exactly part of what Mandalorian and WandaVision have also been able to tap into. Like, I don't think it's any coincidence Disney Plus is releasing these shows on a weekly basis. I think it is 1,000% because of Game of Thrones that they're doing it this way.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think that the content itself speaks to that idea because there is massive speculation that can be done in the culture that we're directly a part of by way of, you know, dissecting episodes and making predictions and spotting Easter eggs and doing all these types of things. It works extremely well because it gives us all of this time to discuss it, to be excited about it, to anticipate it, and all that type of stuff. But I think my big question is like, what was it about the Mona Lisa that was so important or so prominent or whatever the case may be that everybody knows what I'm saying when I say the Mona Lisa? Why do we all know Romeo and Juliet? Like what is it about these things? Or could it be the case that something from this generation that we're living in will forever live in iconic human history?
I feel certain something must. Like, I mean, even now, like movies, you would think just even from like the 70s or 80s would be ubiquitous to like everyone. You'd think like, you don't think you say Jaws to someone and they're like, what? What's Jaws?
No. Of course. And I think that's true. I think the question would be, you know, what, like we haven't had movies long enough. Like, I mean, you're talking like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, 1937 is when it came out. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we're not terribly far away from 100 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's still, I mean, if you say Snow White, everybody knows who Snow White is. Like, that's not like a reach. And it's proving that it has stood up for a huge period of time. Mm-hmm. I guess it's sort of like what I would love to know if I had like a time machine and I could go 500 years into the future, it would be so interesting to me to see what it was like. What were the things that were popular about when I was alive that made it?
I see.
That were important enough.
Besides
popcorn culture, right. where people will continue for years and years to come to the uncanny cultural phenomenon that was the podcast of Tangents.
Exactly.
Not even the first of its kind at all, but the best.
But the one that like just totally everyone's like, yeah, popcorn culture. You're talking podcasts. You remember popcorn culture?
Right. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
It's a popcast. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, that would be the hope. But I think it would be so interesting to know, like, that what is the answer? And the thing is that we'll never know. Because, I mean, even at the end of my life, even knowing, like, best case scenario, another 70 years into the future, we'll still not be far enough to be, like, wildly blown away with what has like stood the test of time.
Right. It is a very curious question. And I would even wonder if it would not be something like I wonder, like, would it be specific shows that stood out, or would you like start to like zoom back to like people, like would it less likely to be a show, or maybe it's just like Netflix, you know?
Right. Yes, exactly. And this all, it like, I've wondered about this before too. Like, if there is a kind of human enlightenment that could ever happen, which would be, and I mean, we maybe talked about this before, but it would almost be like the decision to step away from technology because of the recognition that it was maybe problematic.
Never going to happen.
Likely never.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's why I say, I mean, it would be like true enlightenment. It would be the realization, like, it is worse for us to have better technology. Like, we could have stopped 100 years ago and just applied all of that energy into like spreading that existing technology instead of having like a more concentrated area that has more and more and more with greater disparity everywhere else. Like, that would be such a step for us as a species.
Right.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe not.
Maybe not. You're right. Yeah. That's true. I mean, I guess it really depends on what is the actual function of humanity and all of us. And
oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Big questions.
Sounds like this sounds a lot like the plot of Final Fantasy X, honestly.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Explain.
So at the beginning of Final Fantasy X, this giant whale creature called Sin.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Comes and destroys Xanarkand. And then you, the main character, get transported way into
Titus,
the future.
Titus.
Yeah, Titus.
When I was a kid, rename. When I was a kid, I wanted to, I was like 100% sure that I would eventually name one of my kids Titus.
This is not impossible.
I was like, it is the coolest name.
I mean, people name their kid Titus. That's not like a just Final Fantasy, like super fantasy out there name.
Sure. No. Yeah. But for me, that was one. I mean, that's where it came from.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I just thought he was really cool with like his yellow shirt and like black shorts. And
yeah, it was like his like cargo webbing on the shorts or yeah. whatever.
Amazingly
Blitz
cool.
Ball player.
Blitz ball. Yeah. Man, so cool.
Right. So anyway, you get transported into the future by Sin, which is just the most on the nose name. Ever.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
I'm not lost
on me at all. Yeah.
But the reason Sin comes and wipes everything out is because people like just rely on technology for literally everything to the point where they don't do anything.
Yeah, well, and I mean it's we've seen it in WALL-E. I feel like there's this exact idea is also in effect where you've got people who have, you know, exploited for so very long that like, you know, the homeland itself becomes problematic, but only problematic to a certain extent because we can go to space. And in space, we have not even more amenities, but there are still enough amenities to just basically exist.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know if that's an interesting question because I'm not sure if the comment WALL-E is trying to make is that technology is the problem or if it's like capitalism at its worst.
Sure. You know,
and technology is just like part of how it goes wrong. But it still seems like a very pessimistic view to me that just because you have more technology means people will become like giant slug people or whatever.
Sure.
Like, I'm a little more optimistic than that.
No. I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, keep faith in humanity intact for sure. I just think it would be interesting with maybe where we're going and it's like the attachment. So like a lot of the things we've discussed, like the attachment to screens.
Yeah.
Or realizing maybe at some point in time that we don't need that attachment or we can step away from it or whatever the case may be. I would even say that like generations before us had a lot more of like this idea of like consumerism placed before them that feels like the older I get is not as prominent. Like not to say that consumerism is gone, but the idea of maybe like having less but using the things you have more.
Sure. Yeah.
So it could be the case that even just future generations just have better restraint when it comes to screen addiction.
Hopefully we could pass on those kinds of lessons to the next generation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Guys, well, thank you so much for tuning into this week's extremely optimistic episode of The Pop. As always, if you have any feedback, you can leave comments here on YouTube. You can leave a review of the podcast just over on iTunes, Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, Spotify, wherever your podcasts are pod.
Wherever your pods are cast.
Wherever your pods are cast.
You'll get it eventually. Yeah. It's okay.
Yep. Wherever your pop is corned. Corn is popped.
Alternatively, we also are over on Reddit. Lots of good conversation happening over there. Or if you just wanted to send an email directly to the pop, you can do so at popcornculturepod@gmail.com. If you would like to support us on Patreon, this is the last month to get in on the quarterly merch club for the first quarter of 2021, which is going to be the Fred the Cup Popcorn Culture Yeti mug, which Jay is holding up right there visually if you'd like to see it. There's also a picture of it over on Patreon. That's patreon.com/popcornculture. But otherwise, guys, until next week,
pop, pop.